When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and this is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello, listeners. Hello, David. Hello, recorder. Hello, table.
That's pretty much it.
I was on the train on London Underground the other day.
Yeah.
And this Japanese family got on.
Yeah.
And my little girl, and as they got off, she went, "Goodbye, Twain."
Oh,
really cute.
Oh, that's nice.
And I thought my cold heart was closed to any happy emotions.
Although, you know, there is a time in your life when you have to put aside childish things. I mean, your friends would worry about you, myself included, if whenever you got off a train you said, "Goodbye, Twain."
Yeah.
We would worry about you.
Yeah.
It wouldn't go alongside your usual demeanour.
If someone said that when I was with them, I'd say, "Stop being an arsehole."
Yeah.
And you probably wouldn't call them again. Yeah. Have you been out with Merritt lately? He was saying goodbye to things. Goodbye, chair.
Has he got cancer?
Goodbye, toilet.
Oh. There we go.
Certainly not. Right.
Fingers crossed. Before we start, though, Merritt, we should mention that we are sponsored this week by Her Film Project. Herfilmproject.com or at Her Film Project on Twitter, and this is an organisation that helps promote diverse voices in film. So they started out a while ago now, but they started out with promoting female voices in film, which is why they're called Her Film Project, but they're now branching out into all sorts of underrepresented people. So
if you're the sort of person who says goodbye to inanimate objects,
maybe you'll count. Why not give them a call?
Yeah.
But yes, check them out, herfilmproject.com. So, Marek, you've been to the cinema.
Yes, I went to the cinema. And I went to see The Handmaiden.
Okay, now, I nearly went to see this.
Did you?
I saw it in the cinema window, you know, it was like, Korean film, right? But based on a novel by a British writer.
It is based upon, I think, possibly one of my favourite ever novels.
Really?
I'm quite an avid reader, and this is based upon an absolutely brilliant book called The Fingersmith by Sarah Waters.
The Fingersniff?
Fingersmith.
Oh, Smith.
Not The Fingersniff.
That's different.
I'm not going to go down this path.
So it's too easy, isn't it?
There was a British adaptation of it. It was serialised a few years ago, which I haven't seen.
Was it called The Fingersmith?
Yeah, I think right. So. Anyway, this is the film that's based on it. And this is the problem. So when you go in and you've read the book, it's always a difficult position.
Very, because you have to put aside the fact that you've already had a very different and possibly deeper experience reading a book.
Attached to those characters.
You know what's coming.
Yeah.
It's a short story format film, and so if all of the surprises are gone, it does tend to diminish it.
Yes, and I think that's what happened to me. So, and also, the book is so brilliant. This is just the first two acts of the book.
Right.
They sort of went, "Oh, do you know what? We'll just finish that bit there." And then denouement of the book, I hate to use that word, but that's a word you have to use, isn't it, really?
Well, it's what it is.
Yeah. It's so brilliant in the book, it's so clever and so shocking, and you don't see it coming, that I was expecting that, and that never, when it sort of finished two-thirds of the way through, I thought, "Oh, what?"
Right.
Nonetheless, this film is excellent. It's shot absolutely beautifully. It's a story of it's a poor Korean family, and they're a family of crooks, but it's not really explained much in the film.
Right.
And then there's a job. One of them finds out that there's a job going as a maid to a rich Japanese heiress. And the plan is that they want to get the maid, this bloke who's managed to get in there as her art teacher.
Right.
They want to get help the maid to help the heiress to fall in love with him, so that he inherits all this money, and they're going to put her in an asylum, and so he'll get all the money, and they'll share all the money between them.
Right.
That's the plan. So it's just a sort of what's it called? Like a sort of hoodwinking scheme. Sure. What's the word for that?
Well, I don't know. A hoodwinking scheme.
Yeah. Why not write it?
That's the word, I think. A hoodwinking scheme.
Now this is, it's what's odd is that the book's quite famous because it's sort of the first sort of it's quite Jane Austen like in its sensibilities.
Right.
But is a love story which is between two women, possibly. And that is the real centrepiece of this and their relationship. Whereas the film, a bit like Blue, I talked about Blue is the Warmest Colour being one of my favourite films ever.
Mm.
It does feel that, obviously in the book, it's alluded to, and the sex scenes are not necessarily big things. Whereas in this, it just felt a bit pervy.
Right.
I would love to have a sort of speak to a lesbian friend and ask them what their interpretation of the sex scene was, whether this was just the male gaze doing it, and it was just because it felt like a man directing two women at a point. Now, it's not a big thing in it, but it just felt this is a slightly pervier version of the book, and there's a little bit of that
and isn't needed, really.
Yeah,
possibly.
And there's a bit of sort of allusions to the weird octopus porn thing that
tentacle just, porn.
Yeah, I don't even understand what there's a sort of allusions to that in it. And for me, it's just the fact that I love the book so much. I think the book is astounding, and it just never lived up to that. But nonetheless, is a great film. You can tell when you're watching it's good, but I think I know what happens here, and I want to see what your twist on it is.
Because I've just looked up who directed this, and it's Park Chan-wook, who people may know because he did Old Boy. Is the famous one, which he wrote as well. But he also directed Stoker, which I've talked about on the podcast before, which is a... an English language film with Nicole Kidman and what's her name? Wasikowska, that girl.
I've watched Stoker as well, yeah.
As well as, what was it called? Sympathy for Thingy. Sorry.
Sympathy for Toilets.
That's it, Sympathy for Toilets. I'm racking
Sympathy
my brain.
Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance.
That's the one, which I haven't seen, but I have heard is good. And then Lady Vengeance as well. But Old Boy is a phenomenal piece of work. So it's well directed then, I take it.
There's nothing wrong with direction. I just feel as though I'm just deeply prejudiced watching the film. I'll give it 7 or 8 Marics, but I can't judge it properly because it's someone remaking your favourite memory. So it really clouds.
And taking out a lot of the bits of it and then bringing forward weirdly others. It doesn't sit well knowing a book well and then seeing it acted out, unless the book's kind of shallow, I think. It's difficult.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, I was trying to think of what books there are the film is better than the book. And there are very few. One I did read after I saw the film. I saw Drive, which I loved. And that's based on a book called The Driver.
Right.
And the book is not anywhere near as good as the film. But there are very few exceptions. I think Watership Down is a brilliant book, but I think the film was also brilliant. The first adaptation is brilliant. But so that's a question for you. What films where the book is better?
Good question. Where the film is better?
Where the film is better. I'd argue that, I mean, Apocalypse Now is based on
Half Darkness.
I never really liked Half Darkness.
No, I've read it.
I mean, it's quite a loose adaptation of it.
Yeah, it is.
But it is.
Different war as well. Yeah. But, it adds more layers. But Heart of Darkness is about the right length to make a good film out of, because it's a short book.
Yeah.
And I think that's often the problem. As I said, film is a short story medium. Like, 90 minutes is not a long time to tell a story.
Well, you see, when they try and tell... Like, The Hobbit was three... awful films.
It didn't need to be 3 hours, let alone nine.
Yeah.
I mean, but that was just greed. It was nothing but greed, that, of just trying to spin out another trilogy when it wasn't needed.
Yeah, in terms of the acts, I really loved, I'm going to absolutely ruin these names. The lady who played Lady Hidoki, Min Hee Kim, was brilliant. But I thought that the other actress playing the handmaiden, Tari Kim, was... at some points not as good as I had hoped.
Okay. And is it all in Korean, or is...
It's in Korean and Japanese.
Right.
But I couldn't... All they do is at the start they say the white subtitles are Korean and the yellow are Japanese, which is quite a good idea.
So, okay. Yeah, so what language they're speaking does come into it in who...
Yeah, but I just didn't notice in the end, because fine. I'm not...
Yeah, yeah.
It's so hard to read that fast.
It's really hard, isn't it? Especially reading a colour.
But I would recommend... I'm fascinated. I think I'm the wrong person to go and see this film. If you haven't read The Fingersmith, please go and see this and you will enjoy it. I think it's very different. It feels sort of a very edgy... like a Jane Austen film, but with sort of quite erotic scenes and a bit sort of darker...
Mm.
A lot darker version of that.
Okay. Well... there you go, The Handmaiden, in cinemas at the moment. Right, well, I think it's time for this. Here is a letter from Mark Dixon on the subject of Star Wars / Shit in a Bucket Man. He says, "Hi guys, thanks for all the great recommendations. I particularly appreciate the Netflix and YouTube stuff, as I rarely get to the cinema. I watched Rogue One recently, and although I quite enjoyed it, I couldn't help wondering what they could do if they deviated from the standard war film genre they seem to repeat. I would love to see a taut thriller or murder mystery set in this universe. Do you have any ideas for types of films you would like to see set in the Star Wars universe? Moving on, I would like to introduce you to Shit in a Bucket Man. I see him as a character in the forthcoming Bumming Man movie. Shit in a Bucket Man shits in a bucket, places a purple cape on his newly formed mini-hero and then gives it a name, usually Clive, although he has been known to call his turds Shirley, Ahmed and even Reese. Once caped and christened, he flings the powerful beast at the nearest assailant. Anyway, a Shit in a Bucket Man would say, keep watching the films, Clive." Well, thank you, Mark. I mean, to go with your second point first... I mean, it's always an honour when there's fan fiction, isn't there?
But yeah, I think Shit in a Bucket Man is a good idea, but I think you're mistaking the fact that Bumming Man's a classy film. It's not like I'll go around and it's just... It may be called The Bumming Man, but it's more of an art film than anything.
Once you've seen it, you understand the title, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. It is an art film.
I mean,
film.
It might be Booming Man.
Booming Man.
Yeah, Boo Ming Man.
That's quite clever, though. That's quite clever. And more than one meaning.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but thanks. But as for Mark's point about Star Wars, and it's a broader question, I suppose, but I could not agree with you more. In fact, I was thinking about this only this week, that these massive franchises do tend to get stale because they repeat the patterns too often, and the way to get around this and to breathe fresh life into your universe would be to do a different genre film.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of one example from recent times, which is 10 Cloverfield Lane, which Cloverfield is an enormous monster movie, and 10 Cloverfield Lane, set in the same world, is a psychological bottle episode thriller set in a bunker, and it works brilliantly.
Yeah.
And it makes the world seem so much more inhabitable because you're not party to all the significant events that happen in it. And I think Star Wars would be a perfect place to set this. They, from what I've read, because I'm a big Star Wars fan, have been since I was very young, and there was plans for a adult TV series about bounty hunters set on Coruscant, which is the planet at the centre of the Empire, which is an entire city that involves a planet. And it was set there and was about tracking down criminals and people. Nothing to do with Jedi or, you know, the epic battle for the stars. It was just like set in this world, so you've got the same races and everything. And you could really focus on character. And I think it's a brilliant idea. I think they should be doing that with the films. You know, you can have your episode 7, episode 8, episode 9 that keep doing the massive space opera war stuff. But then let's have some other films set in this. I think it's a perfect idea.
Yeah, the percentage of films actually involve saving the world is far too high.
Yeah.
It just seems, oh, well, we're saving the world again. I mean, one of the greatest, I think 10 Clover Lane's a perfect example. You've got that huge backdrop of something.
Yes.
Which gives you that load more texture.
I think it's this. There's a real escalation in trying to trump what you've done before. And when there are so many films in a franchise, there's an inflation that goes on every time. It's why there are so many films that have a portal in the sky. Because after you've destroyed a massive gun and then a man who can fire lasers out of his eyes, the entire sky turning into the baddie is the only... There's nowhere left to go. You know, it's just a massive portal in the sky. And it's boring. Massive portal in the sky is a boring adversary. It was good when they did it in Ghostbusters because we hadn't seen that effect before.
Yeah.
We have now, many, many times. And I think it doesn't have to be the world at stake for it to matter.
Well, Alien's a perfect example. You've just got that, and you've got all the characters are brilliant in that.
If you like the character, the fact they're in jeopardy is enough. Just getting them to safety is enough of a mission.
Yeah, I think that I really like the films that sort of started off with that Agatha Christie's 10 Little Indians, I suppose, where you've got 10 people and they just get knocked off one by one.
Yes.
That would be great for Star Wars, just to have some sort of weird thing.
Proper sort of murder mystery thing. Or,
yeah.
And I think, you know, they've set up... It needs to still feel Star Wars-y, so they've set up smugglers and, you know, with Han Solo, and then with Jabba the Hutt, they've set up there is organised crime, and they've got bounty hunters who, you know... And these are peripheral characters in the main saga, but you could find out, you know, more about it.
Yeah, that bar they all go to is brilliant, you know, that's a...
At Mos Eisley with all of the different...
Yeah.
Areas. Yeah, so there's plenty to play with. Huge amounts to play with. I mean, if anything, George Lucas, you know, he... One of his great strengths with the original trilogy was releasing action figures which all had names, so you could learn the names of characters who are not named in the film, you know. And that's why people got obsessed, because, you know, you see one shot of this weird alien drinking at the bar and suddenly you can buy the action figure and find out his name.
Yeah.
Like, kids love that stuff. No, couldn't agree more.
Here's another letter from Stu. Subject: worst I made it through. This is about the worst films, or worst that weren't completed. It's complicated. Worst 4 to see films: Attack of the Clones, left. Mad Max New One, fell asleep. Guardians of the Galaxy, slept, woke, left. Countless ones turned off at home. I can't now think of completed worst films. If I finished it and thought it was shite, was it not bad it was good enough to finish, or complicated? I need to sleep. It sounds like Stu wrote that probably about 4 o'clock in the morning.
I wonder if Stu has a sleeping problem, maybe narcolepsy or cataplexy, because it sounds like he falls asleep a lot.
Yes.
I mean, maybe seek medical attention, Stu. I mean, that's a lot of sleeping during very loud experiences.
Yes, I mean, you can just get some rest.
Just get some rest, mate. Get well.
Here's a letter from Jules.
Jules says... Following Chris Webb's realisation of the fact Andy is in a single-parent family... this is in Toy Story. Chris Webb wrote in with the realisation that there is no dad.
I'm just trying to get Chris on the quiet.
Okay, yeah, during a letter. That's a good time. Jules continues. This puts an interesting new spin on the entire saga. It potentially turns the Toy Story into a sort of benign version of the Babadook. Nothing much else to add, just the idea tickled me. Keep watching them, guys. Cheers, Jules. If you've not seen the Babadook, it's a very good modern horror about a single mother having to raise a slightly emotionally troubled child, and with supernatural connotations as well, which is very good. But yes, I can see that, you know, the whole thing being delusion of Toy Story.
Yeah.
Put a different slant on it.
Have you seen a film then?
Yeah, I've seen a film. Yeah. It's not one that people have recommended explicitly to the podcast, but one that people have told me is good in passing. And it's been out for a while now, so I just wanted to go, I'll watch that. And it's The Disappearance of Alice Creed. Have you seen this?
I've heard it's a bottle episode thing, isn't it?
It is. It's a British film starring Gemma Arterton as Alice Creed with Eddie Marsan, I don't know how you pronounce his name, but he's brilliant. And Martin Compson, who you may know from Line of Duty if you watch that, but he's a Scottish actor.
Yes, yes.
Who's also very good. And it's just the three of them, that's it. But it's from 2009, and the story revolves around these two guys who kidnap a girl, Alice Creed, and lock her up in this apartment and then try and get ransom money off her father.
£6?
Six whole pounds. That's how much they... spoilers, whether they get their £6 or not.
Okay.
So that is it. It is set almost exclusively in that flat. It is a character study. It had elements of Bound. Did you ever see Bound? The film that the Wachowskis made before The Matrix, which is... Gina Gershwin, Joe Pantoliano, and Jennifer Tilly. Again, another crime thriller in a single place with only three people in. But there are twists and turns, and you discover more about the relationships and blah blah blah. You know, stuff you expect from a bottle episode when they have to do this. Great opener. Nobody speaks for possibly the first 15 minutes. Like, it's all done with it.
Nice.
It's great. It's great. You know, which just raises the tension slowly. And it is quite shocking, actually, at the beginning as well, because you don't know their intentions. You don't know if they're going to hurt this girl. And it's, you know, it's quite grim. And everyone in it is brilliant. I mean, I've been impressed with Gemma Arterton, who people
sort of...
She was
put her on the map, really, wasn't it, this one?
I think so. She had been in St. Trinian's, I think, as the lead in that, so was clearly, you know, a very beautiful woman, but this was the one where she showed a bit more acting chops, you know. And then the other two are fantastic as well. It's a thoroughly enjoyable bottle episode that I have some problems with. It I think it doesn't quite manage the depth that it should be doing for such a slightly grim tale. It's you can see the function of the different bits of the script, if that makes sense. So when it takes a turn, you see it as a piece of writing, not as the characters driving it. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Where you just go, oh, I see what you are trying to do.
Look, it's hard to try and get the escalation when you've only got...
Make it natural.
Yeah,
make it organic.
Is it set over... What is the time period of it?
It's about 3 days.
Okay.
So from kidnap to... making ransom demands to arranging a drop-off and blah, blah, blah.
Is it satisfying? Because a lot of time with these bottle episodes, I feel, feels like a good low-budget play, but I seldom feel satisfied by the end of it.
That's interesting, that, because I would say probably not entirely. Towards the end, it feels like they had four or five slightly twist endings that they thought of, and rather than picking one, just put them all in end to end. So it has false endings, you know, they're called in writing, but it has about three of them. And ultimately, it hasn't picked whose story it is. I mean, are we supposed to be seeing this sort of perversely through the eyes of one of the kidnappers? Seeing it through Alice Creed's eyes? Because it's her... And it simply isn't Alice's story, but then sort of becomes it near the end. And so there's an element missing. There feels to be just, there's some depth missing that I can't quite put my finger on. But it ultimately ends up being, as you've described, it's not quite as satisfying as it could have been. But it is, it's a well-crafted, you know, romp, which for it being three actors and that's it, it's... You know, it's good. It's enjoyable.
Is it on Netflix or something like that?
Yeah, I found it on one of my streaming services. I'm not quite sure which one. because there are quite a few. You can get stuff. I think I did the video shop equivalent of getting it for £2.50.
Okay.
Just to rent it. But no, it's well worth a watch. And if any budding script writers out there, I think if you want to make your first feature, then a bottle episode is a bloody good call to try and get the budget needed to make one. And this is a good one, so watch it and sort of learn the lessons from it. I think it's you can do a lot with visuals, and the tension is there. The tension is definitely there, and I think that's one of the hardest things to achieve. Brilliant performance.
And it was the director wrote it as well, Jay Blakeson.
I believe so. And was it a debut? I didn't look that up.
He was
now.
A writer on The Descent, which is a great film.
But yes, he'd done two. Oh, Jay. So it might be just the letter J. Could be a man, could be a woman, not sure.
Who knows?
But two short films and then this. And then a film called The Fifth Wave. You heard of that? In 2016 with Chloe Grace Moretz.
No, I've not heard of that.
Not heard of that at all. But a few things in the works. But yes, a bold debut, I'd say. And no, interesting enough.
Well done, love.
Yeah, I'd probably give it 6, to be honest.
That's pretty much what it got on IMDb, isn't it? 6.5, right, right.
Yeah.
Why not watch it after all? If you've watched every film that's been given a 10, 9, 8 or 7.
It's time for The Disappearance of Alice C. Reed.
Yeah. And you've probably, well, to be honest, you're probably quite old.
Hey?
If you've watched all the films that are given 10, 9, 8
or 7. It's taken you a while. You've got a lot of free time, certainly.
So don't. What, there's no point watching it?
Well, no, maybe. Maybe as a palate cleanser, because you've enjoyed all those perfect films. Maybe just come back to the plebs a bit.
So you need to watch a bad film
every now and again.
Just to recalibrate.
Yeah. Otherwise, you know.
Is it, like,
you might fly too high.
In January, when you watch all the Oscar films, you get used to thinking this is how good cinema is. And then if you only watch films, you were an alien, and you came down, you only went to the cinema in the summer, and just watched, you think, these humans are watching real shit.
It's true. Expensive shit, though. Really expensive shit.
It's not as a rip. And there's no lasers in this.
No lasers, come on.
That
was some lasers in
it. That was a callback to last week's episode of the IMAX lasers.
With laser.
Alright then, that's about it.
That's about it. I think we'll be back next week, fingers crossed. But in the meantime, keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.